Brian Negus is a photographer who is registered blind and lives in the UK. Now, does that sound like a contradiction? Well, many registered blind people have some useful vision, and Brian wants to make contact with other visually impaired photographers to share experiences. Brian has set up a Flickr group for UK-based visually impaired photographers, and he'd love more to get involved. Now, do you fancy trying your hand at VI photography? Brian Negus joins us now on the line. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
We were having a look at your website there and some lovely pictures on it. Do you find that people find it quite strange that although you're registered blind, that you actually have an interest in photography?
People initially find it strange. It's odd, isn't it? Because I suspect we both feel that losing your sight in no way should stop you doing the things that you love. And we find ways of doing things, don't we? I spend quite a lot of time going around giving talks to local groups as a blind photographer, because I think it is such a really good example of how sight loss needs to stop you just getting on with your life. So, yes, it may initially seem strange, but I think the message I like to get out in my talks is it's not strange at all. Blind people with enough enthusiasm, with enough maybe a little help and training, but they can do stuff. They can do the stuff that the rest of you can do.
Have you always been visually impaired?
Right. My condition is called hereditary optic atrophy. It means that I've been losing my sight gradually. I've been registered blind for about 30 years now. Before that, maybe for about 20 years, I was registered partially sighted. And it was, in fact, first spotted by a school teacher when I was 11. And he spotted that I couldn't read the blackboard. It took that long for people to notice.
It's quite funny. I went short-sighted very quickly when I was about 8, and my dad had noticed it. But I remember I got my first pair of National Health glasses, and in school I didn't want to wear them. So I used to copy my neighbours that I was sitting next to, his answers. He would let me do that because I couldn't see what was on the board. And I copied them all. I think I was one out, so all the answers were right but in the wrong place. I got rumbled.
That's brilliant, because that reminds me of how I got through university. Of course, in the days that I went through university, there was no kind of special support for people with sight loss. So it was just a question of finding your own way. And the way that I worked, I did a degree in mathematics, which involved lots and lots of watching people scribble on blackboards. But I couldn't watch people scribbling on blackboards, so I made friends with a chum who had very good handwriting, and I copied his notes one page out of sync with the lecture. So I never did quite manage to participate in the lectures, but at least I got the notes. Now, I never did think of copying his answers. That's much more enterprising.
Yeah, I know. I think I've given something away there. Now, you've had quite a lot of interest in the photography. Let's talk a little bit about the photography then. Are there certain pieces of equipment that make it easier if you're visually impaired to take good pictures?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these days there are two things that would make it easier, but they're both kind of similar. First is a lot of visually impaired photographers who find things like smartphones are very useful, because for people with some useful vision, the large screen on the back of a smartphone can be remarkably helpful. Also, as you know, apps like Seeing AI can make it quite feasible for people with incredibly poor vision or maybe no vision at all to take photographs, because Seeing AI will describe what you're pointing your camera at and will help you decide whether or not you want to take that photo. I'm working with at least one lady who's doing just that, enjoying using Seeing AI to help her take photographs of her friends and of what's around her. I think that's amazing. But what it was that got me into photography, and this was when the first digital cameras became affordable, that was around about the year 2000. And around the year 2000, I was able to buy a digital camera with an LCD screen at the back. This is a screen like a smartphone, which displays the image. And at the time, it was maybe about an inch or so square. Now, there was no way I could use that directly, but I also used some magnifying spectacles. In my case, they're 12 times magnifiers. If I hold my camera within virtually the tip of my nose and point my spectacles at the camera LCD screen, I get a reasonably good idea what I'm looking at. So I can work with the combination of the LCD screen and magnifying specs to take the shots. Then when I get home, These days I work on a Mac computer, which has already got built-in brilliant screen magnification software, so I can zoom in and out as I work. I tend to use Lightroom as I work in and out with the Lightroom software to edit and improve the photos. And similarly, when I'm on the Flickr web sharing site, I'll be zooming in and out all the time and occasionally using computer speech to hear people's comments and stuff like that.
And photography, as far as a record of places you've been, things you've done, you know, you're sharing it probably with the majority of people that are ever going to see these pictures are not going to be visually impaired. So it's the way that we do remember and document a lot of things these days.
Isn't it just? My Flickr website is my personal diary, in a sense. It's a kind of photo diary, as well as the place that I like to share images which I think are particularly pleasing. So it has two roles for me.
Now, there's certain rules about framing if you're doing things properly and perspective, which I imagine you can perhaps bend the rules a bit when you're visually impaired.
Of course, it's always fun to know the rules, but as I think you know, it's much more fun and much more creative to bend the rules as well, yeah. I have studied quite a lot by reading of, you know, what is considered to be the correct rules for photography, but... Yeah, I think, as you say, because of the sight loss, one doesn't necessarily always follow those rules. And in fact, some of my best shots are purely accidental. I'm not very good at following action, for instance, because it happens faster than my eyes can keep up with it. But nevertheless, it doesn't stop me trying to take action shots. Like, for instance, there's a recent Santa fun run. I just stood there and took photograph after photograph after photograph, not quite knowing what I was doing, but there were some really nice shots in that collection, and that was just pure luck and persistence.
And, of course, you're not wasting reams of film these days, are you? So it doesn't cost you anything to take umpteen pictures.
That's right. The only thing it costs you is a load of time later looking at the wrecked things and working out which ones are worth seeing.
Well, again, I suppose you find your way of doing it. I love photography. I'm not particularly good, but it was interesting you saying that about, a potluck shot. I have a friend, he's retired. He's a guide dog called Lucas, and we've been very close over the years. And he came down to visit last year, and I was out at a tea room with him and Jill, whose guide dog he is, or was before he retired. And anyway, he was sitting there, and it was a nice place. I think it had black and white tiles on the floor. He's a white lab. And right. I was trying to get a picture and trying to get it, you know, framed, and he's moving about, and I thought, oh. So I just took a pot shot and thought, I wonder what happened, and it's absolutely a beautiful picture.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, and isn't it so pleasing when something like that actually works?
Mm. And you kid on, you knew what you were doing?
Yeah, yes, it's often the ones I didn't plan that work best. You know, for instance, I went to a local nature reserve to try and photograph a murmuration of starlings. You know, when the starlings make these wonderful misty patterns in the sky. Well, there were two problems. One is I could barely see it at all. The second was, according to my wife, there wasn't much of a murmuration anyhow. There were only about 50 starlings there. But on the way back, it just happened to be the night of a full supermoon rising. And I got this beautiful shot of the supermoon rising, you know, totally unplanned. I just hadn't thought about that. But it was just there in front of a beautiful distant tree, which gave me a lovely silhouette of the tree against the full moon. Totally unplanned, one of my favourite shots.
Is it easy to take pictures in the dark? Cause I know in the old days you had to have a really slow shutter speed and a special type of film to do pictures with very little light. Do you need to do anything now?
You certainly need a tripod. And one of the big problems of using a camera for night shots is that often there's not much that you can see in the LCD screen itself. So often, again, there's an element of potluck in there with night photography. But the moon is a very bright subject. So if you have, as I have, a camera with a very long lens and you point it and eventually find the moon, then there's plenty to see in the viewfinder because the moon is sufficiently bright. And in fact, the exposure time isn't very long. You know, it can be significantly less than a second for a bright, full moon.
No, it's really interesting. I think, obviously, when we start talking about photography, you can spend thousands of pounds on equipment. But just getting started out then, you reckon we should just have a go with our camera phone then?
Smartphones are absolutely amazing now for people with sight loss. And as I said, apps like Seeing AI or even things like VoiceOver or TalkBack, you know, the systems on Apple iPhones and Android phones for people with sight loss, those systems can give you a significant help in framing your photo. Certainly, an Apple phone will tell you that there's a face in the screen and where it is in the screen and whether it's centered or large or not. That's all very useful stuff. But seeing AI is better still in that it will describe in more detail what you're pointing your camera at. And then we'll let you save the photograph. Wonderful.
Of course, seeing AI just now is only available on iOS, isn't it? It's not available on Android yet.
That's right. Although there was an announcement, I think yesterday or the day before, that Google are developing a Seeing AI lookalike. And it, like Seeing AI, it will be available in the States only initially, but it should be coming fairly soon.
It's all good. How do people get involved with you then? Is it just a matter of just signing up and just chatting to each other through the internet?
Yeah, basically. The Flickr website is where we started and where we're still active. You may know that Flickr recently got sold off to an American company called Verizon, who in turn sold it off to a company called SmugMug. So we're all a little bit uncertain what will happen to Flickr in the near future. But let's hope it still survives. There's every evidence that it might. And if it does, if you simply go to the Flickr website, which is Flickr, which is spelled FLICKR.com, then if you do a search for a group called Visually Impaired Photographers in the UK, you can join us there. And if you do wish to join us there and share your photos, you would be very welcome. And you will hear comments from your visually impaired friends.
And others as well, I would imagine, actually.
Quite a lot.
I mean, I actually was fortunate enough to interview David Katz last year, who has been, I don't know if you know his work, but he's been a celebrity photographer for a lot of years now, and he revealed that he's actually legally blind.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, and he actually...
he's able to carry on with that work. That's great.
Yeah, he just ploughed his own furrow, but he reckoned... Like you, doing action shots are difficult, so he can't leave it to chance. So he said in a lot of ways, it's harder to make sure you get that shot that you need, especially if it's, you know, he was doing sport at one time. He was, in fact, he was the one that captured, remember the famous streaker at the cricket?
The one with the policeman's helmet.
I think so. I think he was the one that captured that. So,
oh, fantastic.
So it shows that it can be done, but just for a bit of fun, it doesn't matter if you're experienced or not, just have a go, is that what you would say?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely have a go. And if you really want to do it, you will find a way that works personally for you. You know, as I said, for me, it's magnifying specs and the like. But I do know other photographers with no sight whatsoever who just stick to studio work because that's easier to control. And, you know, it's a question of what you personally want to achieve and how you want to do it. But there's always a way.
Brian, it's been fascinating chatting with you. Could you just give us the contacts again for would-be photographers that would like to get in touch?
Yeah. If you wish, I'd be very happy to give people my email address. So if people want to make direct contact that way, my email address is nice and easy. It is brian.negus, which is spelled brian.negus @gmail.com. Alternatively, if people would like to go to the Flickr.com website, and Flickr is spelt without an E, then they can search for a group called Visually Impaired Photographers in the UK and join us there.
Brian, thank you so much for your time. I know you're a very busy man, and we'll catch up again in a little while and just see how it's all going.
That would be absolutely super. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking.